Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the court. My name is Jason Bowles. I'm from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I represent Guy Reardon in this matter. Your Honors, in the order instituting proceedings by the Securities and Exchange Commission, that body alleged a kickback scheme dating from approximately 1996 to 2002. I think this case very concretely illustrates the reasons we have statute of limitations in our laws. The testimony below that supported the purportedly supported the SEC's order was from Michael Montoya, who was then the treasurer of the state of New Mexico. In his testimony at in the appendix is 298 to 300, unequivocally he stated repeatedly that he had never received kickbacks on sales transactions. Within the statute of limitation period, there were only five transactions that the SEC alleged from the time September of 2007 forward. One of those transactions, Your Honors, was a purchase of securities, of agency paper. Four of them were sales. Mr. Montoya, when asked repeatedly by counsel for Mr. Reardon whether he had ever received kickbacks on sales, he said clearly he did not. One of the contentions raised in the commission's decision was that there was some confusion. If you go back to the record when he says that, I believe it's at page 192, the confusion in Mr. Montoya's mind was why the treasurer had done sales at all during that period. And what he stated on the record was, I'm kind of confused because Guy Reardon was always purchasing securities. I'm not sure why we did these sales. But when he was asked toward the end of that day and the next morning by Mr. Gorentz repeatedly, did you receive kickbacks on sales, he said no, he did not. And I think that is the singular issue in which the commission's findings are not supported by substantial evidence.
What about the Sandoval testimony, which described how the scheme here included both purchases and sales?
I believe Mr. Sandoval testified quite a bit about the last look procedures, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. He did not receive any money ever from Mr. Reardon. He did testify to that. So he was not privy firsthand to any kickbacks to Mr. Montoya except through Mr. Montoya's statements to him.
Right.
And all Mr. Montoya said was that he would give Mr. Reardon last looks and that he would get money. But he never told Mr. Sandoval, in the record, Your Honor, that it was for purchases and sales. The only testimony this court has before it as to whether there were kickbacks on sales is Mr. Montoya's. He was the only first-hand witness, besides Mr. Reardon, who denied paying any kickbacks. But Mr. Montoya was the only witness that said, and he said repeatedly and clearly, I did not get kickbacks on the sales portion. I didn't care about it.
Sandoval said, was asked, in every buy or sell of agency paper transactions, were you told to call Mr. Reardon? It was either Mr. Reardon or Mr. Tucker, but for the most part, Mr. Reardon. And went on to say, it was a payment for either a flexible repurchase agreement or agency paper that was purchased or sold. So at least as Sandoval describes the scheme. And I take your point that Sandoval didn't witness, I guess, the when the kickbacks were occurring and what they were exactly in connection for, right?
Yes, sir. And Your Honor, there is no testimony from Mr. Sandoval that he knew kickbacks were being paid on anything except through Montoya, sir. And the fact of the matter is the law judge below talked about how senior United States District Judge James Parker had found Montoya very credible. I tried the Vigil case, and I crossed Montoya twice and got to observe his demeanor. And I know Judge Parker, and he said he was very credible. Then the judge found in the hearing he was very credible. He was candid. But the one piece of his testimony the judge and the commission did not accept was the piece about not getting any kickbacks on sales.
Now, on the other, so you have Sandoval throughout, and you also have the expert analysis that says those four October 2002 sales were the worst bids. So something was going awry there, correct?
Judge Kavanaugh, yes, sir. That was Mr. McKinney. The problem with his testimony, and I think it was brought out later in the record, He did not have clear records as to what the bids were. And these agency markets, they move so quickly. Mm-hmm. And these bids change and the values change. He didn't have the records, and I think he said that. There was some ambiguity whether those were the worst bids or not. The other thing we heard, Leo Sandoval had no securities background whatsoever. Montoya put him in there because he was a childhood friend. They very well may have just accepted these bids because they thought they were the best. I mean, that's not on the record either. I think Leo Sandoval was an idiot when it comes to securities transaction. I don't think he had any idea.
So when he was just talking about it generally but didn't really know precisely what he was talking about.
I don't think he had any clue. Yeah. We had the state of New Mexico being run, the treasurer's office, by guys that, you know, just grew up together, traded baseball cards. I mean, it was absurd. But I think, Your Honor, the testimony about the sales transactions is unequivocal. There's no substantial evidence to support the commission's decision, and that affects everything. It affects the disgorgement, which becomes a penalty when you consider the fact the commission went back all the way to 1996 with no records distinguishing between purchases and sales and just hit every commission and every bonus Mr. Reardon had ever gotten and said all that needs to go back to the tune of $900,000+. It affects the bar and his licensing.
The $400,000 of the $500,000 of the civil penalty too, right?
It does, Your Honor. $400,000 of the $500,000. It would take away $400,000 of it if this court did not find substantial evidence on the sales. The bar on the license has affected Mr. Reardon personally in his ability to support his family, to get a mortgage license, to get a real estate license. He retired from the securities industry in 2007, several years ago. No intent on going back. If there is no evidence to support the sales portion, and there's one transaction, the purchase, in the statute of limitations, which, by the way, wasn't even alleged correctly, the SEC had to amend during the proceedings to bring that correctly before the court. The petition before the SEC wasn't even alleged correctly. But if that's the only transaction supported by substantial evidence, the bar on association with dealers should also be overturned, Your Honor, because there is no scheme or pattern within the statute that the SEC could point to.
Say again how the bar hurts him if he's never planning to trade securities again?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I thought part of his argument about why there shouldn't be a bar was he was never planning to do it again.
That's correct.
So how does it hurt him?
Well, it hurts him in getting licenses in other areas, his mortgage license. He'd like to still work. Real estate, mortgage, he can't get other licenses. That's the problem. Since he's been barred in the securities division, nobody's going to get him a license in another professional context. And if I could reserve 1 minute 45, Your Honors.
Sure. Anything else?
May it please the court, Louis Delatorre for the SEC. Let me go right to the points that have been raised about the evidence in the case, which is reviewed under substantial evidence standard here, of course. Mr. Sandoval testified that while he was working at the treasurer's office and rigging bids for Reardon, at Montoya's request, that Montoya told him that Reardon was paying kickbacks for the business, and that's at Joint Appendix 343, 344, Joint Appendix 370. Sandoval drew no distinction between purchase and sales transactions. If you look at JA 348, 349, for example, bid records confirm Sandoval's testimony that he doctored bids on Reardon transactions. His testimony was at J 346 by removing fax lines that showed when the bids came in so that Reardon could be allowed to bid last with knowledge of the other people's bids. This included four October 2002 sales transactions. Now, Reardon was awarded the October 2002 sales transactions despite having the worst bid on all four, as both sides' experts agreed. Joint Appendix 1034, the division, Joint Appendix 829, Mr. Perrone, Mr. Reardon's expert. Now, Mr. Garcia stated to the FBI that Montoya confided in him that Reardon was paying kickbacks and getting a look at the bids. Now, Reardon's argument is that Montoya accused him to curry favor with prosecutors when Montoya was arrested in September 05. But Montoya told Sandoval and Garcia well before knowing he was under investigation, and because they told the FBI well before he was arrested. So basically, and furthermore, the bid records seized in December 2003, which Mr. Sandoval had kept in binders, show, because an audit of the office had said, you know, do some paperwork here for these bids. So they had started to keep paper, which means they had to, they needed to show on paper that Reardon seemed to be coming in with better or wasn't coming in at long after other people when he could get a more favorable market for him. The point is, bid records seized by investigators in December 2003 show the very bid rigging techniques that Montoya testified to on the stand. And these records had been seized back in December 2003. Mr. Montoya was out of office. They had been kept by Mr. Sandoval.
Can I ask you a different question? I think both sides have put forth good evidence, good arguments about the October 2002 sales. I just want to ask about the disgorgement and the statute of limitations for disgorgement. The commission's position, I guess, supported by case law, that there is no statute of limitations for disgorgement, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor, that basically Zacharias and Johnson in this circuit have said that disgorgement is a return to the status quo ante, and therefore it doesn't, statute doesn't apply to it.
Now, in the text of the statute that we're dealing with here, it says, except as otherwise provided by act of Congress, an action, suit, or proceeding, et cetera, for the enforcement of any civil fine, penalty, or forfeiture, pecuniary or otherwise, shall not be entertained unless commenced within 5 years. Any civil fine, penalty, or forfeiture. I want to focus on the word forfeiture. How is disgorgement paid to the government different from forfeiture?
The point of the disgorgement is basically to require the defendant to give up ill-gotten gains that he got through fraud that he should never have had in the first place.
Isn't that the very definition of forfeiture?
Well, I think that can cover situations where you use property in the commission of an offense. I think it can. I think that can deal with other situations where you're not basically saying to somebody, "You got certain money from your fraud. Now give back that sum of money." I would again say that Zacharias and Johnson. I think where
right. I think you're right about our cases are probably pretty clear on that. I was just looking back at the statute and was curious about the word forfeiture, because it does seem to me that forfeiture and disgorgement are two ways of describing something very similar, particularly when it's disgorgement and payment to the government as opposed to compensating the victims.
Although, Your Honor, I would just note that there was in this case ordered a fair fund. In Sarbanes-Oxley, it allows the commission to return disgorgement money. In this case, if they can collect it from Mr. Rinnick and give it to the state of New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. It's all been given to the state of New Mexico?
The disgorgement and if there is disgorgement, penalty amounts can go back to the state of New Mexico.
Can go or are going?
Are going, according to the ILJ put in a plan that said we're going to do a fair fund and the commission affirmed with that. And, Your Honor, you reminded me of one point to make. In the reply brief on this issue of these sales, these last transactions, they say, well, that couldn't have happened the way the commission says, because all he got at the very end of this scheme was $500, and that doesn't explain how it would cover all these transactions. That's raised in the reply brief for the first time, and I just wanted to explain it just very quickly to you. Reardon's payment at their final meeting, being only this $500, is explained not only by the circumstances, namely that Montoya's leverage is very low because he's about to go out of office, but also by the fact that he testified at JA 194 that Reardon had made a partial payment earlier, but he did not pay me the full amount. And this meeting at the Kix gas station, which Reardon admits he went to after having Montoya demand money, that payment of this that Montoya testifies of the $500 was this additional amount that had over the partial paid before.
Can I go back on the same question about the statute of limitations? So there's no statute of limitation, no, there's no other statute of limitations other than the one we've been focusing on here, so for a cease and desist order or for disgorgement, and would this apply to any 10b-5 violation?
It would in the sense, yes, because the cease and desist order is prospective. This court in the
it's
draft
disgorgement,
case,
I guess I'm more interested in.
Oh, would that apply, I'm sorry, to any type
any
of
10b-5 violation?
Well, in Zacharias, it was a Section 5 case involving disgorgement.
Uh-huh. Is there for private actions, is there a limitations period?
They have, yes, they do have limitations for, I think there's a, the Congress put in a change, it was 3 to 5, there's a discovery provision in there, I think.
This is only by the SEC?
That's right. That's the case law that we're talking about.
Presumably there would be some kind of due process argument if you decided to sue George Washington's heirs in the last case because of insider trading in the land of the Potomac and all the witnesses were dead.
I guess the question.
This hasn't arisen. The
commission's not willing to concede.
No, I would not suggest that. That would be any exercise of discretion at all. I was trying to stick to your pure legal question. It would never happen, but could it legally, theoretically? I don't think it would ever be brought. I think the point on these remedies again. It's either prospective or it's returning status quo on those remedies that are not subject to the statute.
Return to status quo can go back, as Judge Garland's saying, 20 years, and SEC brings an action against someone and then tries to disgorge whatever ill-gotten profits they try to prove from something that happened 20 years ago, 30 years ago.
Well, Your Honor,
yes is a fair answer.
This just hasn't arisen, and so theoretically, of course, they would be deprived of all sorts of other remedies. They would have all sorts of evidence problems of their own.
Disgorgement can be a big remedy, obviously.
That's right, it could.
The big one in this case.
Yes, it could. But here there's and another point to make here, Your Honor, on this point. You know, this is not a case where, as in Profit, for example, there was a misconduct in 1990, there was even a private lawsuit, and the agency's just 6 years passed by, this guy continued in the bank. This was a situation where this came to light because, well, first of all, Sandoval was approached by the federal authorities in December of 2003. And then later, Mattaglia was arrested in September 2005. So this commission's case, and then there were criminal cases that went into April 2006, September and October 2006, and the commission brought its case within about a year of that, given despite all of the large amounts of documents in this case, the amount of material to be gotten from other parties, and so forth. So this is not a situation where the commission is saying, on the one hand, this is a situation a person really needs to be barred but hasn't acted promptly to do that and reflected that concern in how they've handled the case. I think, you know, there's just on a detail point, I think that the point about, well, the confusion point, Your Honor, that Mr. Mattaglia said well into the cross-examination that he just didn't think there had been sales. That's the thing. He just kept saying, and that was made well into cross-examination at JA 282, JA 292. So that was the reason he was having trouble with that. But the documentary evidence, Sandoval's testimony, all show that the sales were covered. There's an argument in his brief on, he says that he didn't have the money to pay this. He says that he includes the point that a land deal was made in September 2002. In fact, at reply brief 17, that was not, there's no support for that. And in fact, what the site that he gives for that says that Reardon testified in July of 2007 that he already had sold that land. So that's just a mistaken point there. I think the I think that, oh, the point that he had, there was a period of time where they had stopped doing transactions with each other. That was because Montoya's testimony that rising interest rates had driven the price of the bonds down, so he did very little transactions in agency securities during that period. Reardon's testimony that during the period, Reardon also testified during that period he chose not to do business with the Treasurer's Office, and those sites are at JA 280-282, JA 614-615. I guess I just wanted to set those points, since so many of these arguments really reduce to factual arguments in this case, because the Commission did limit the, as to those remedies that could be subject to the statute of limitations, it did limit it to the conduct within the limitations period, of which there were the five securities transactions. So the bar and the penalty are limited to that. I will stop the use of nicknames. There's testimony in the record that says clearly that was done because Sandoval was keeping records of the payments made on other kickback schemes from Montoya, JA 894, 895, JA 953. So this substantial evidence here is just very strong. Any further questions, Your Honor, on any legal issue?
No. Thank you.
Sure.
Mr. Bowles, you have some rebuttal time left. Go ahead.
Judge Kavanaugh, I believe you're correct. Disgorgement and forfeiture in this case operated very similarly, if not identical. This disgorgement order is on a series of transactions from 1996 to 2000 in which Mr. McKinney testified there was no records. There is no records. There's no delineation between purchases and between sales. The department went back and took every commission and bonus and added interest that he had ever had without any causality tied to whether there were kickbacks on those amounts. And it resulted in SEC versus First City Financial Corp.
Well, talks about the SEC's argument is this is all one scheme.
Well, Your Honor, there's clear testimony in the record, first of all, that there was no scheme as to the sales. And that came from Mr. Montoya.
If you win on that, you've won everything. So
yes, sir.
We're sort of on your second level argument here about disgorgement, right? So assume for the moment that you've lost on that and that there were commissions on sales. The SEC's argument, as I understand it, is there's a scheme, and if he had stopped paying at some point, he wouldn't be getting anything. And that's why they're connected. You don't have to show each time that you give a kickback, you just have to be giving kickbacks in a scheme.
Well, I think the judge below herself found that she was finding that each one was a separate violation in and of itself, each instance. And I believe she found that to, in response to their continuing violation argument, that was her finding.
So how did she reach the disgorgement result then?
I'm sorry?
On the disgorgement result, was that her finding also?
I don't believe that was particularly related to the disgorgement. She just made that finding, Your Honor, that each one had to be considered on its own. And if you do that and you have one transaction within the statute, you have a man that has to defend himself against allegations we don't even have records for, two admitted drug addicts testifying about events nobody can remember, and they're taking everything out, all the commissions he ever received without any causality, Your Honor. And that's the problem. That's why statute of limitations should apply to disgorgement in this instance. I see my time's running out. Do you have any questions?
No. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Gentlemen, the case is submitted. Thank you.
his capital law first, and then we'll come back.
He didn't know. I talked to him. Cartel, yeah.
Okay, thank you.